all like four of us in California, my high school class. The guy was a Mason by day. He had a business, a masonry business, and he was an elder in the church and worked a lot with teens. And I remember him saying more than once, I mean, we'd be praying, you know, we'd gather up in a circle oftentimes, and we'd have a chain prayer, right? You have a circle and everybody would go around and you say your prayer. And often when Mr. Kellner would close the prayer, he'd ask for blessings on each child there by name, you know, and whatever they needed in their life at that time. Sometimes he was embarrassingly accurate about what I might have needed in my life at that time. But he would ask a blessing on each of you. And when he closed the prayer, oftentimes he would say, hey, thank you for all the work that I have to do. Thank you for the health I have that I can go out and do this physically demanding job. I appreciate your love for me, O Lord, and please keep me from being rich. Please keep me from being rich. So I don't want the temptation that you warn about in your word. So he was actually to that point. Now, you guys, who prays that they don't become rich? Anybody here? Would you like to have a little chain prayer we can do it right now? So what he was saying was, I don't want to be placed in a situation, because he actually taught a lesson on this as well. I don't want to be placed in a situation where the Bible has countless warnings against something, and I say, I want to place myself in the middle of that. I think I can handle it, right? Which I thought was pretty interesting. Now, we had another elder that had the whole other view and said, I wouldn't mind having just more than I can handle because I'll just find good things to do. And that's the right heart, right? It's the right heart. So let's look at some other things that we see in the Bible, some from Paul, some from other places that talk about this warning that Paul is giving Timothy here in the chapter 6. Mark 10, 13 through 16. I'm going to read the 13 through 16, even though it's working into 16 and following, just because I love the story. I love the what I can think of, how this looks and how it went down, but I also think they go together. The little children were brought to Jesus for him to place his hand on them and pray for them. Remember that? And the disciples rebuked those who brought them. What just happened there? Can you see that? Jesus is teaching. People are bringing little kids, right? Little children. Let's go see the master. Let's go see Jesus. And they're going up there and the little kids are coming to Jesus. And it wasn't the ushers, okay? It wasn't the people that run the building. Who was it that was telling the little kids to get out of there? Hey, don't bother the master. Get away. He's trying to teach here. That was his disciples. And he looked, I believe, right at his disciples and said, let the children come to me. Don't hinder them. The kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. And after that, he placed his hands on them and he went on from there. The next story in line there starts in verse 16 and following. Says, just then, a man came up to Jesus and inquired, teacher, what good thing must I do to obtain eternal life? Now, who is this man? What's that? He's a wealthy guy, right? Wealthy young man. That's the way it says in mine, a wealthy young man. The disciples jumped right up there to get the kids away from Jesus. When the guy that's well-dressed walks up there, right? When the guy gets out of his Ferrari and walks up there to see Jesus, so they're going like, hey, don't bother Jesus. No, they're probably going, move aside, please, move aside, please, move aside. Okay, this guy wants to see Jesus. Maybe he wants to give a donation. Okay. But this guy comes up to Jesus right after the children thing. Comes up to Jesus and he inquires, teacher, what good thing must I do to obtain eternal life? Was this guy completely in the dark about what it is to serve God? Not at all. In fact, he thought he was serving God pretty well. Right? He thought he was doing a good job. He wanted to hear this teacher tell him, oh, you're doing a great job. I think that's really what he was after. Why do you ask me what is good? What an answer. Why do you ask me what is good? Jesus replied, there's only one who is good. Capital O. There's only one who is good. If you want to enter life, keep the commandments. Did Jesus know he kept the commandments? I suspect so. Okay? So the guy goes, which ones? What? You're like, I keep 8 of the 10. Is that good? I mean, it sounds like that's where you're going. Like, which ones? What commandments? Okay? Or maybe he just wants to be clear they're on the same page. Jesus answers, do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Where did these commandments come from? The Ten Commandments, right? Everybody would be familiar with that. That was a Hebrew at all. Okay, honor your father and mother, and love your neighbor as yourself. You think that guy was listening to that and going like, "Bing, bing, 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 got it." Okay, this is the part where he's going to stand up with me and say, "This guy has kept all the commandments. Follow his example. All these I have kept," said the young man. But interestingly, he says, "What do I still lack?" he still felt he lacked something, didn't he? What do I still lack? Jesus told him, if you want to be perfect, or whole, if you want to be perfect, go sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me. And of course, we know what he did. He couldn't do that. He said he went away sorrowfully because he had a lot of things, because he had a lot of possessions. That's the end of the story as far as we know. But I like to think that maybe he ruminated on that a little bit, don't you? That maybe he thought about that. Maybe he gave some of his things. Maybe he couldn't do all the way. You know, who knows? But what if he would have done that at that moment, if we would have known his name in the Bible, right? Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Bob. Because he followed Jesus. He's the guy that gave himself to follow Jesus. Okay? It would be cool to have a biblical Bob. That'd be kind of cool, yeah. But I suspect he wouldn't just be the young ruler, the rich ruler, in a little heading in your Bible. It'd be the story about the guy that we know, if he had done that. I thought it was interesting that Jesus didn't condemn him on the front end of that thing. Jesus was able to relate to him and say, you've done some good things. You've done some good things. And he kept after him. So Jesus, you really want to know? You must really want to know. You keep asking me. Here's what I think you need to do. Because Jesus knew his heart. After that occurred, Jesus said to disciples, verse 23 of that same reading, truly I tell you, it is difficult for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Again, I tell you, it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Mr. Kilner quoted that one a lot, by the way, after that prayer of his. Okay. You hear sometimes that eye of the needle was like some gate that camels had to get on their knees and go through. You ever heard that before? Forget that. It's a needle. Okay. I think Jesus really, I mean, does it matter if it's a camel going through this or if it's the eye of a needle? I think Jesus was making a point. Okay. But it makes me feel better if it's like, I think it's just a place where a camel had to get on his knees because that means I can still get there. It's just harder. And I'm willing to work a little harder if I can be a billionaire. Jesus said, this is tough, it's hard. He told his disciples, it's hard for rich men to enter the kingdom. Not impossible, but it's hard. Matthew 6:21. This is part of the Sermon on the Mount, chapter 6 of Matthew. So Jesus is sitting there on the hillside with the people, and he says, listen, where your treasure is, that's where your heart is. How do you know where your heart is? I mean, if we want to do a test, how would I know where my heart is? Okay, yeah, there you go. Don't you have to spend a lot of time, especially in our culture, to even make a living? Yes, you do. So what's the difference between that? What's the balance of that and having our mind and our heart on God and not on being greedy for money? What's the difference? How do you tell in yourself?
The desire in your heart. What is the desire?
Okay. Yeah. I think that's a good way to live. I haven't thought of that. That's good, though. Desire. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, you can serve
God all the time. We best. I think we better. All the way back in Ecclesiastes 5:10, whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless, says the writer of Ecclesiastes. Remember the quote, was that John D. Rockefeller? Remember the guy that was the Standard Oil guy? Very, very wealthy, John D. Rockefeller. And a reporter asked him one time, because you know he's just getting wealthier and wealthier and wealthier, and he's like, everybody knows John D. Rockefeller. He's the guy, the wealthiest guy of the age, back when he was, you know, in the news all the time for his wealth. And this reporter asked him, he said, John, when is enough enough? I mean, how much money is enough? You remember what he said? Just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. Okay? That was his answer. And I think he was trying to be kind of cute, you know, trying to be kind of funny. Just a little bit more. The richest guy in the United States at the time, just a little bit more is enough. But that very answer tells me there's never an amount that's enough, right? Never an amount that's enough. John D. Rockefeller also was quoted as saying later in his life, he goes, I was a very wealthy man. And wealth does buy happiness, but it doesn't buy joy. I thought that was pretty insightful of him. He said, I was pretty happy. I'll tell you straight up, I was happy, and yeah, you could buy some of the happiness. Some of the things I had made me happy, but I wasn't full of joy. Hebrews 13:5, exhorting the believers, right? Who's the writer of Hebrews? You guys got that one figured out? And you guys aren't helping me at all. Don't know how old Timothy was. Hebrews, okay. So some choices there. You know, it might have been Apollos. A lot of people think that. Barnabas, perhaps, but maybe even Paul. But the writer of Hebrews 13:5, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have. Kind of sounds Pauline there, doesn't it? A little bit, the content thing. Because God has said, never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. So he's comparing this love of money as a love of security, you know, something to keep you secure. And he's saying, don't worry about it. God's going to take care of you. Do you believe that, by the way, that God will take care of you? Raise your hand if you believe that. God saw that. Okay. That's good. I do too. I think that's a cool thing. But I think a lot of people in today's world don't believe that. I think a lot of people, even wear the name of Christ, are a little bit sketchy on that. I'm not sure that's exactly right. So I'm glad you believe that. Matthew 19:21 to the young man again. Just to remind us, if you want to be perfect, go and sell your possessions. Do we have to do that today to be perfect with God? He didn't tell me, right? And tell you. This is one of those instances where I think he's making a point. I don't think this is a broad scope. I don't think this is an establishment of a law, but he's making a point that guard your heart. Guard your heart. Make sure you put your heart in the right thing. Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Yeah, very much so. And I don't say that to weasel out of me having to follow that same admonition, but I think this, if this is, you know, one of those things, if you have ears, let them hear. If this is for you, listen to this. Listen to this and make your heart match what Jesus wants you to do. Because I think there are some of us that he would be speaking to and say, you need to really lighten the load over here so that you can love me the way I want you to love me. I think that's still an appropriate message. So there are a lot of things. We're continuing on Matthew 6:24, up on the Sermon on the Hillside there. No one, you know this one, no one can serve two masters. I didn't think that was a problem for years and years when I was a kid. I had a King James Version. No one can serve two masters. You can't serve God and mammon. I didn't know who mammon was, but it didn't sound like a guy I would like. Okay, so I was good with that. Well, then I got a better version I could read. No one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to one, despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Cannot do it. Do you know anybody that serves money? Got time to shoot. I keep stepping on it. Okay, no names, but do you know anyone that serves money? Do you know of anyone that serves money? Yeah. I mean, in our culture, that lifts you up, right? I mean, that raises you up. But according to Jesus, you can't do that and serve God. Doesn't it seem like you kind of could? Why you look at me like I just blasphemed or something? Ah, excellent. Excellent. Yeah, that's the one that gets you, isn't it? Yeah. I think some people say, I think I could try that. What's that? That's right, he couldn't. Jesus said it was this very choice he was asking him to make, wasn't it? That or me? I got to stick with that. Okay. Yeah. 1 Timothy 6:10, right in the middle of our chapter. Okay. Just to make sure we get this one down. This is going to be the third time I think I've said this. Just so we make sure and understand what he's saying. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. I've been around long enough and in the church long enough, I've seen people wander from the faith for a variety of reasons. It's not always money or love of money, but it is sometimes. I have seen that sometimes. In fact, today I think that's not one of the main reasons people wander from the faith, but it still is a reason and it still does occur. So remember, a warning to Timothy, a warning to us through Timothy that we might understand that. And in the same chapter that we're reading, starting in verse 17 through 19, command those who are rich in this present world. By the way, how would you feel if your preacher, Timothy, he's the minister there, right? I mean, when you walk into Ephesus, you see the Church of Christ meeting on the side of a, whoever they meet, okay, a creek or something, and it says minister on his door to no room, okay, minister, pulpit minister, Timothy, okay. How would you feel if your minister commanded you something? You ever had your minister command you? That's what Paul asked Timothy to do. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant. Good to have you. I see you're wealthy. Don't be arrogant. Okay? You think that's how that went down? Don't be arrogant. Don't put your hope in wealth. He didn't say to mention it to him. He didn't say to teach it to him. He didn't say to try to encourage him. He said, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant or to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly supplies us with everything for our enjoyment. I thought that was kind of cool. Not just supplies us with everything for our enjoyment, Timothy. Okay. Command them, second time, to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to serve. Have you ever been to a church where or the preacher is one of those kind of guys that you're pretty sure when you left that you were commanded a couple of things? And my grandma and grandpa went to one like that, okay? And I remember it well. I mean, that guy, you felt when you went out of there like, man, he was telling me about it. I think he commanded me something there. I think that's kind of what Paul said. This is so important. I want to make sure these people understand this, okay? The people that are wealthy in your body, make sure they understand this. Verse 19, in this way, they will lay up for themselves treasures as a firm foundation for the coming age, that they might take hold of this life that is truly life. How about Revelation? To the church in Laodicea, remember the churches, the seven churches he's writing to. Revelation 3:17. You say, I am rich, I've acquired wealth, I don't need a thing. But you do not realize that you are wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked. And I think that's one of the pitfalls of having a lot of wealth. You feel very secure, all right? Very secure, I don't need anything. I told you a bit ago that I talk to a lot of people that are unbelievers. A lot of people that I talk to that are like professing atheists, there are a lot of atheists that are well off. They're quite wealthy and proud of it. And this just almost sounds exactly like some of the things they would say. I don't need anything. What do I need that you have for me? Blind, pitiful, and poor. That's what the writer of Revelation says, okay? Because they're so comfortable and so secure that they don't feel like, what do I need that I can't have? I think that's what Paul's warning about, that very attitude. So it didn't happen with the American atheist movement. It happened a long time ago. Ecclesiastes 7:12, all the way back there again. Who wrote Ecclesiastes? Yeah, Solomon. Okay. Wisdom is a shelter as money is a shelter. Wisdom is a shelter. Money is a shelter. But the advantage of knowledge or wisdom is this. Wisdom preserves those who have it. There's some wisdom there? Yeah. Because both these things are good. Both things are a shelter. Both these things will make you comfortable. But one of them will preserve you. One of them will leave you. Or you'll leave it behind. One or the other. Okay. Luke 16:13-15. This is Jesus. He's talking to his disciples as Luke gets us down here. There's some Pharisees and teachers of the law hanging around where they can hear, apparently, but he's talking to his disciples, okay? And this is where he's saying, again, to them, no one can serve two masters. Either you hate the one, you love the other, you'll be devoted to one, despise the other. And his disciples are getting this down, okay? You can't serve both God and money. The Pharisees, who loved money, it says in verse 14, heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. Can you get a mental picture of that? Pharisees sneering at Jesus. Who are Pharisees, by the way? What was their job? What did they do? You're good. Yeah, they were looked up to by people that, followed God. Okay, but these guys over there listening to Jesus tell his disciples this about money, and they're sneering. What does that look like? I could see it if they made a movie. I could see sneering Pharisees. Yeah. That's it. Exactly. Arrogance is a big part of sneering. Okay. So they hear this and they're sneering at Jesus. He said to them, so he's talking to his disciples. The Pharisees are sneering. And I'm thinking Jesus goes, right? Turns and looks at the Pharisees, even though my version doesn't say that, but it says, he said to them, you are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of others, but God knows your hearts. What people value highly is detestable in God's sight. Okay. Again, this balance, right, of what we're trying to serve. Sometimes it doesn't make sense to us initially until you understand God and you understand how important it is to follow God, that we really can't do both. Always take God. That's what Jesus is telling his people. These guys, these Pharisees had no clue that they were talking to God and sneering at God. How would you like to figure that out in your, you know, once you've passed from this life into the next, I sneered at God. Matthew 13:22. This is the day that Jesus spoke to a crowd from a boat. Remember that? He goes there on the hillside down by the lake, and the people are gathering around him so much, he goes like, let's just get out in the boat. And then he talked back to the shore. That's what's going on here. The seed, this is when he did the one of the parables, right? You'll recognize it. The seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. The deceitfulness of wealth. That's what I'm talking about right here. So you get the word to somebody, but they're deceived. They're wealthy. They don't need this, right? That's the deceit. So that's what I'm talking about. Right from the boat. James 5:1-6. You know, if we're doing chapter 6 of Timothy, we're jumping all over the place in there, aren't we? But I just want to show you how much is in the Bible, how much is in the whole New Testament, especially, and Ecclesiastes, but how much is in the Bible about this subject that Paul is warning Timothy about. Do you think this warning is for Timothy? Like, Timothy, don't get rich. If you get rich, be really careful about it. Or do you think this is for Timothy to pass on to people that he'll be interacting with? I think interacting, yeah. I don't think it's especially that Timothy is going to have to deal with this himself as much as he's going to have to deal with people that need the help, people that need the instruction. So here's James writing to rich people. In fact, he says that among the 12 tribes. Okay. Now listen, now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that's coming on you. Now, if I'm a rich people and I'm reading that, I'm going like, what? Weep and wail because of the misery that's coming on me. I'm good. Verse 2 says, your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Gold and silver doesn't really corrode, you know. I have a minor in chemistry. So, but what's the point? It'll be worthless, okay? There's a time when it will be worthless. Good word, okay? Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look. The wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. Master-slave relationship, right? The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourself in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the innocent one who is not opposing you. So he goes all the way from the way they treated people that worked for them all the way up until here's the way you treated the Lord himself. This is who you are, okay? This is who you are. So warnings that are cried out by James. So back to Timothy 6, and we'll close that for you. At the very tail end here, verse 20, Timothy, guard what's been entrusted to your care. Turn away from godless chatter, the opposing ideas of what's falsely called knowledge, which some have professed, and in so doing have wandered from the faith. Grace be with you. Timothy, be content. Learn to be content. That was a big deal with Paul. Learn to be content. Whether you're the slave, whether you're the slave owner, whether you're wealthy, whether you're working as you're going to be working with the church, and have to learn to be content no matter what. And content, this contentedness in your life doesn't come from wealth, doesn't come from position, it comes from relationship. Right? It comes from relationship with God. And that contentment in that relationship will spread out and help you have contentment with this relationship as well. People who are strongly connected to God, which is Paul certainly was, Timothy certainly was, and Paul mentoring Timothy in this instance, if you have contentment here, that's going to spread out here in the church in Ephesus. I suspect it would have been a joy to be in the body that met where Timothy was the evangelist, don't you suppose? Wouldn't you have liked to hear Timothy speaking and a guest teacher every now and then? And here's Paul, by the way, coming in for the weekend. Okay, wrote a couple of really good books, the Corinthian letter. But yeah, it would be cool to, I mean, these guys actually got to hear this teaching firsthand. I'm sure Timothy would take some of these things that we're reading in this letter and pass along to the congregation that met there from his mouth, from Paul's instruction, right to them. And I'm sure they knew some of the same things that we know because of the teaching that they had there. Well, that's the wrap on 1 Timothy chapter 6.